Case number 07-7151 et al. Marlon Godfrey et al. Versus Allen Iverson et al. Appellants, Gregory Iverson. Mr. Martin for the appellants, Mr. Latimer for the appellees.
I apologize.
Mr. Martin.
Good morning. To the panel, may it please the court. We're here on the appeal of the decision of the trial court below of a 3 to 5 minute barroom brawl. This case can be characterized as having occurred inside the I Bar at 18th and I Street Northwest here in the district, and it took 3 minutes, at maximum 5 minutes. The bar was very dark, very loud.
That's a pretty long fight, isn't it?
It's
longer than a round in a professional boxing match.
I thought it was a short period of time. I think it was a pretty good fight. When they say 3 to 5 minutes, it wasn't 3 to 5 minutes of throwing punches the entire time from the moment the first push or punch occurred until things were settled down. From 3 to 5 minutes had elapsed. During that time period, it was a fight, and plaintiff below, Mr. Godfrey, the appellee, one of the appellees, the appellee here, is a third-degree black belt who voluntarily entered into the fight. The way the fight began is from the facts that were adduced below. Mr. Godfrey was there with a friend and wanted to sit in the VIP roped-off section of the nightclub. He was asked to move by a man by the name of Terrence Williams. And as the evidence at trial shows, the fight was between Mr. Godfrey, the black belt, and Mr. Williams, a former college football player. Mr. Williams testified at trial that he engaged Mr. Godfrey, that he hit him, that he punched him, and it was his punches. And for the record below, from the record below, we can submit that Mr. Terrence Williams was well over 6 foot tall and probably 250 pounds, who was a person who was fighting with Mr. Godfrey. Following the trial, or at the trial, what the purpose of plaintiff below was to find the deep pocket. The deep pocket here is Allen Iverson.
Can I just ask?
Yes, Your Honor.
On page 7 of the red brief, the plaintiff, in describing the testimony of the witnesses, describes Sean Sturtevant as saying he observed Mr. Kane punch, kick, and hit Marlon Godfrey with a bottle. Was there that testimony?
There was that testimony.
And he also said he also saw Mr. Kane and another gentleman striking Mr. Godfrey. So it wasn't only, I take it, Mr. Williams who struck Mr. Godfrey, at least with respect to the evidence at trial.
That was the evidence at trial, Judge Garland. They were looking for a deep pocket with Mr. Iverson. Mr. Kane, Jason Kane, my client below, was a bodyguard. And as the bodyguard, he was assigned the task of escorting Mr. Iverson to the nightclub and providing security for him.
Well, he was the district judge made a finding that he was an independent contractor?
That is correct, Your Honor.
Was he working for any kind of security agency?
He was not, Judge. He was he wasn't incorporated. He provided services on his own. He was not incorporated.
Was there any evidence of a written contract between him and Iverson?
There was no evidence of a written contract. There was evidence that he had been paid, but no evidence of any written contract. We believe there were several highly prejudicial rulings from the trial court, which substantially prejudiced Mr. Kane and Mr. Iverson at trial. The first of those is the introduction of highly inflammatory and extremely prejudicial evidence of another fight, a fight at a restaurant called Crabbers in the Hampton Roads area of Virginia. That was so devastating to our case, we believe, that at the trial, the trial judge allowed two witnesses from that fight to testify that they had been victims of the fight. They were allowed to bring photographs, severe photographs, which were introduced before the jury, showing punches to the face, certainly the damages from punches to the face, bloody lip, busted face. And over our objection, that evidence came in. It came in purportedly to show that Mr. Kane, first that Mr. Kane, that Mr. Iverson had substantial knowledge and prior knowledge of conduct by Jason Kane. The witnesses testified, and the witnesses could not identify Mr. Kane as having been involved in that fight whatsoever. They then indicated that it was used to show supervision of Terrence Williams. Although Terrence Williams was never named as a defendant below, the trial judge allowed this evidence to come in to show that Allen Iverson was negligent in his supervision of Terrence Williams, because he, Allen Iverson, had witnessed the fight below where Mr. Williams had beat these people up. But there was no testimony whatsoever that came out during that trial that Allen Iverson was anywhere near either of these fights. So the jury received that highly prejudicial and inflammatory information, and it prejudiced our case. We were also prejudiced when we attempted to impeach Plaintiff Godfrey, the black belt, with evidence that he had recently had a peace order or restraining order taken out for him for threatening to kill a witness. He had testified on direct that he was very peaceful. He had testified on direct that he used karate only as a means of self-defense and for preserving and bettering one. And we went to attempt to impeach him. And while the trial judge admitted that the information in the impeachment material was clearly relevant, she would not allow us to ask that question.
What was the point of the impeachment to show? I mean, there was no doubt that he was injured, right? That Godfrey was injured.
He was injured, Your Honor.
He was injured. It was the point of the impeachment to try to establish that he started it?
The point of the impeachment was to impeach, to show his reputation for the purpose of the impeachment was to really to impeach his credibility. He had testified and his the truthfulness of his statements. He had testified that he used karate only for purposes of, yes, Your Honor. The short answer should have been yes. It was to show that he had started a fight. That
otherwise, I mean, the fact that somebody's violent doesn't mean that you can go bang him on the head, right?
It was to show that he had started a fight, right. And as a matter of fact, he had threatened to take the life of a woman at another time, and he'd started that fight. While the injuries were short-lived, I believe I've asked for 3 minutes, to reserve 3 minutes.
That's a long time.
I'm going to see.
If you're going to reserve 3 minutes, maybe you can answer three questions for me before you do that. On the IIED issue, the intentional infliction of emotional distress.
Correct, Your Honor.
Yeah. You agree that psychological injuries are recoverable in a battery case.
Correct.
So why does it matter with respect to the IIED claim? What did that add with respect to the damages?
We were ruling just as a matter of law. You're correct, Judge, that there are damages either for the battery.
It wouldn't matter if we rule that there was no liability on the IIED. It wouldn't make any difference on the damages. It's not a criminal case, so being found liable of intentional infliction of emotional distress is hardly bad for somebody who's already been found guilty of assault and battery.
I think the prejudice to us. I'm sorry, Your Honor. I think the prejudice is that it allowed for an escalating of the amount of damages. We believe that $260,000.
In what way did it allow for escalating? Was there an instruction that said, under intentional infliction of emotional distress, you could get more damages, psychological damages, than for assault?
There was not.
Okay.
There was not.
All right. Now, on the proximate cause instruction that you're challenging, it looks awfully like the one you asked for. In fact, almost identical. Is that wrong?
They were very close. They were very close, Your Honor.
And with respect to the ordinary care on negligence, that also looks almost the same as what you asked for on negligence. Your proposed non-standard jury instruction includes a sentence, thus to establish a claim of negligent hiring, I don't know why we're on that, a plaintiff must prove that the defendant had a duty of ordinary care, that defendants breached that duty of care. I mean, you were complaining about having the words ordinary care put in, right? That's part of the contention that the instructions were wrong.
What we were trying to show that there was an obligation for the plaintiff in below to show that Mr. Iverson had breached his obligation of ordinary care in the hiring Judge Randolph, which is why that was in there, in the hiring of Jason Kane originally. And our argument was that they had presented no evidence. So while we asked for that jury instruction, we argued that there had been no evidence whatsoever. So
it's really not an argument about instructions. It's about failure to prove the case.
In essence, it is, Your Honor. And I would say, if I could, before I sit, that with regard to Mr. Iverson, we would submit the issue of negligent supervision on the briefs. We would argue that the defendant below, the appellee here, does not contest the requirement that there be some need for some expert to testify specifically with regard to law enforcement and security personnel. There was no expert testimony here.
I'm not following that argument exactly. It seemed like there's a sort of depends on the facts. If Mr. Iverson were standing next to Mr. Kane, and Mr. Kane started, pulled out his gun and started shooting, and into the ceiling, and Mr. Iverson didn't say a word, he said, go ahead, have at it. Would there have to have been an expert to testify that the employer should have told the employee to stop shooting?
On the factual basis, no. But the standard of care as to, and that's a pretty extreme hypothetical.
Right, so if instead of the bullets, he's throwing punches, or if instead of the first punch, he's pushing that other security person, isn't it up to the jury to decide whether Mr. Iverson, having been there personally and seen the event, should have stepped in and stopped his employee? Why does that require expert testimony?
That was not the facts or the evidence that was presented below.
I thought there was evidence, one, that Kane pushed one of the another security person there, and that Mr. The plaintiff here stepped between them, and then there was evidence of a fight that lasted between 3 and 5 minutes. Is that accurate description?
That's a fairly accurate description, but the layout of the nightclub, Mr. Kane had secured pretty much where Judge Henderson is, Mr. Iverson on a sofa in the VIP section. He left that section and walked around the VIP section to come around to the floor, and there was no testimony below.
What was the distance between Mr. Iverson and Mr. Kane?
I think that, and I'm going, there was a diagram, and I'm going to believe that, I think the testimony was, going from memory of a trial a year ago, somewhere in the area of 15 to 20 feet, but in between that distance were people. And Mr. Iverson, who stands maybe 6'1", was looking out over the heads of people. So there were crowds of people between him and the dance floor. So there's no testimony whatsoever that he could see, and there was no testimony below that Mr. Iverson could see what Mr. Kane was doing at the time that Mr. Kane was on the floor. So it was our position that if they were going to rule that Mr. Kane did something that was inappropriate, there was a requirement for an expert as to whether his conduct, because there's no testimony of what Mr. Iverson saw. There was our requirement, there was no testimony that his conduct was such that the average layperson would know that was a breach of a standard of care.
Thank you.
All right, thank you. Mr. Latimer.
Good morning, Your Honor. Gregory Latimer on behalf of Mr. Godfrey. Let me start off with, this is not a case where the evidence here was only from about a Terrence Williams fighting him. We have outlined in our brief the testimony of Mr. Fitzgerald, Mr. Sean Sturdivant, Mr. Saul Simington, Marlon Godfrey, Jamal Daniels, David Cottrell. All of those people testified as to the beating that Marlon Godfrey suffered in this nightclub. Everybody except Marlon Godfrey that I have mentioned identified Mr. Kane as one of the people that was beating him. And it doesn't matter if you got a black belt or a green belt or whatever kind of belt, you get hit in the head with a bottle from behind and you lose control of your senses and your faculties. It doesn't matter. You get a beat down, and that's what happened in this case. This man suffered a ruptured eardrum, a torn rotator cuff, a busted up head. He was in therapy for well over a year, and they suggested that is not evidence, sufficient evidence. And this was supported by medical testimony, his general doctor, his eye, ear, nose, and throat doctor, and his psychologist. All of these people testified as to what this man went through, and they say that doesn't support a claim of intentional infliction of emotional distress. I submit otherwise. They've also, in this case, and it's very important to note, they don't even challenge the assault and battery. They don't challenge that a jury found that there was an assault and battery in this case. Not one place in any of their briefs do they claim that a reasonable juror could not have determined that Jason Kane assaulted and battered Marlon Godfrey. And if you look at page 25 of the, I'm sorry, page 54 of the joint appendix, in the jury instruction, which they agreed to, they concede that Jason Kane was an agent of Allen Iverson. So we have an assault and battery by an agent. They concede that he is an agent that clearly can be responsibility for the actions. You have a jury instruction that spells out exactly what the facts are relating to.
Mr. Latimer, may I go back since you raised this? On page, what is it? I can't tell what page of the joint appendix this is, but it's page 98 of the transcript, and the district judge says that Mr. Kane, he was not an employee of Allen Iverson. He was clearly an independent contractor. Even you, Mr. Latimer, says he didn't have the authority. He, Iverson, I guess, have the authority to tell him how to do his job. The court finds there's not sufficient evidence for a reasonable juror to conclude that Iverson had the right to control Kane in the performance of his work and the manner in which the work was to be done. Iverson no more gave this gentleman any instructions about how to provide security. So now, given all that, how can Iverson be charged with negligent supervision if he didn't have the right to, in the court's words, control Kane in the performance of his work and the manner in which the work was done?
Well, he didn't have the right. What the court is saying there, I think, is that this guy is supposed to be providing security, and Allen Iverson is not supposed to tell you how to provide security for me. However, when you look at the standard, and the court sets forth that standard on page 56 of the joint appendix, and it talks about that it tells the jury you have to find by preponderance of the evidence that Jason Kane committed an assault and battery against one or both of the plaintiffs, that Allen Iverson knew or should have known that Jason Kane behaved in a dangerous or otherwise incompetent manner, that Allen Iverson, armed with that actual or constructive knowledge, fails to use reasonable care in supervising Jason Kane.
And supervising him, yeah, but the judges found he had no right to do that.
Well,
he had no right to control him in the performance of his work and the manner in which that work was to be done, and the manner and the work was providing security.
Well, I disagree with that. I mean, if you have someone that is working for you.
You disagree with what?
If the judge is saying that, I disagree with that because that is inconsistent with the law.
It's not if the judge is saying that. I'm reading you the transcript. The judge made that finding.
Well, I don't think so, not if you give this instruction. And I think that you're reading that out of context. If you give this instruction.
The question was, this was a colloquy between you and the judge, and the question was the judge going to find that Kane was an employee, and the judge refused to find that and found instead, applying the control test, that he was an independent contractor.
But that's irrelevant in this context, because as an independent contractor, if a person has an independent contractor and that person is working for them, you do have a duty to assure that that person performs actions on your behalf in a certain way. So it doesn't matter.
I hire a guy to take down a tree that's on my that's borders on my neighbor's property. He climbs a tree with a chainsaw, cuts off the top, and it falls on my neighbor's house. He's an independent contractor. Can I be charged with negligent supervision of him?
If you're standing there and you tell him and you can see that that tree is going to fall in that neighbor's house.
I'm standing there. I don't know anything about tree work.
But you're taking, you know, if you don't know something about one thing, that's one thing. But in this situation, we're not talking about not knowing. Here's a man getting beat down. You are the employer, and you're watching a man get beat down. It's not about a tree. There's something you don't know about.
Say something about the watching part. Opposing counsel said that there was no evidence that Mr. Iverson could see what was going on at all.
That's not true. And two people talk about that, and that is Mr. Curtis Fitzgerald. Mr. Curtis Fitzgerald says that at the time that Allen Iverson, and Jason Kane get into having words, Allen Iverson steps back and stands up on the couch as if he thinks something is going to happen. At the time that he observed that Mr. Kane pushes him over, he sees Allen Iverson smirking on top of the sofa. Mr. Cottrell testifies that he observed Mr. Iverson standing there looking at Jason Kane involved in this situation. So it is not true that there was no evidence of what Allen Iverson did. There are two people who specifically testified that Allen Iverson appeared to be observing what was happening, and in one of them said that at the time that it went off, he was standing there smirking. So clearly Mr. Iverson was in view. Mr. Iverson testified that he didn't see nothing. He saw nothing going on. He didn't even see Mr. Kane push Curtis Fitzgerald. He didn't see nothing. No fight took place. Nothing happened in his presence. The jury didn't believe that. These people were less than 10 feet away. There was a diagram that was drawn of the area, and it was a very small area, as everyone testified, and everybody was right there in close proximity to one another.
Mr. Latimer, you said there were two witnesses. You just mentioned Mr. Fitzgerald. Who was the other?
Cottrell.
Cottrell?
Yes, sir.
Well, actually, there's three. Was Godfrey able to testify that Iverson was observing all this?
No, because once he was hit, he wasn't able to identify anything. Okay. Once he was hit, he was dazed and confused and basically out of it. But again, all of these are peripheral issues that they are attempting to raise, but we go back to the assault and battery. In this particular situation, there's no doubt that there was an assault and battery, and there's no doubt they concede that he was his agent. It's not even an argument about
it. What is your answer to the defendant's claim that under the law of the District of Columbia, that unless the duty of care is within the common knowledge of individuals, that you have to put an expert witness on? There's a lot of cases saying that, and I don't know that the duty of care with respect to supervising a bodyguard is something within anybody's common knowledge.
Well, I think, again, you know, what they're trying to do is to mix apples and oranges. What the law says in that regard is that when the profession or the activity is something that is beyond the ken of the average layperson, then you need expert testimony. And the case law that has come down and talked about that is when you're talking specifically about police training, police practices, the training, and those type of situations. We're not talking about that. What we're talking about here is a fight that your bodyguard is engaging in. You're standing there. By its very nature, you're in close proximity. Otherwise, he's not a bodyguard. And all we're saying is it's not beyond the ken of the average layperson. Just like the Court of Appeals in the District of Columbia has repeatedly ruled that the negligence, the supervision of police officers, and like this court ruled in Daskalea, the supervision of jail guards and having striptease events go on in the jail is not something that you need expert testimony to tell you that it was a dumb idea. You don't need an expert to tell you that something is stupid. You don't need an expert to tell you that something doesn't make sense. You don't need an expert to tell you something that is obvious. And it is obvious that if your security guard is beating somebody down for 5 minutes, and I submit to you that a 5 minute beatdown is a long time. It is a long time. You have time. I'm sorry.
Yeah, you haven't. Your brief doesn't cite the Briggs case from this court, which was decided little more than a year ago. And Judge Edwards has a long list of the cases from the D.C. Court of Appeals that required, or from ARCA, that required expert testimony on the duty of care, like maintaining leaning trees, applying hair relaxer, tightness of handcuffs, what the ground should be under a monkey bar, and maintaining streetlights, and ordering building materials, and installing a crosswalk, and all those things. I must say that what is the duty of care? What was the definition that the judge gave?
Ordinary care, which is exactly what ordinary care is the standard here. If you're supervising somebody that's performing a duty for you, you have a duty to exercise ordinary care in supervising that person. The question here, and what they're trying to make this appear to be, is that you now have some specialized duty to know when to supervise. That's not the point here. We're not talking about how high monkey bars should be off the floor, off the ground, to assure that they are safely constructed. We're not talking about whether or not someone should have specialized training in the use of hair relaxers in order to prevent damage to your hair. What we're talking about is, if you're standing next to somebody working for you and that person is engaged in an assault against another person, do you have a legal obligation, a moral obligation, to say, hey, stop? Don't do that. I don't think it takes an expert to tell you that. And if it does, then something's wrong with you. In this case, that's what the jury found. Allison Iverson.
Any of the cases that are the D.C. Court of Appeals has ruled on with respect to expert testimony involve the supervisor actually being present? That is, the defendant actually being present while the event occurs?
I think that the DACA case deals with that in terms of if it is occurring in your presence. And I think we cite that, Dr. V. McCray. And it talks about that if you have an obligation to take some action, if something is occurring in your presence. And in this situation, I mean, it would be somewhat ridiculous to say that if someone doesn't have prior knowledge of your propensity to do assaultive or engage in assault-type conduct, you don't have an obligation to stop them, even though it's occurring in your presence, if you have no prior knowledge. That doesn't make sense. You don't get to kill me just because the employer didn't know that you had the ability to engage in that type of conduct at some point.
Well, if the Secret Service agents are wrestling somebody to the ground and pummeling them, can the President of the United States be charged with negligent supervision?
I think if the Secret Service agent was engaging in an assault, a clear assault.
Yeah, it's a clear assault.
And if the president did not do anything, I think he would be remiss. But, of course, the president would be immune. I mean, Allen Iverson is not.
The answer would be that, Mr. President, our job is to protect you, and my judgment is that this guy needed to be taken down.
Well,
threat to you.
If there was some evidence of that, in this case, the evidence was not in that position. This was not a situation where there was a fight. This is a situation where there was an outright assault from the beginning. That's what the jury heard. And I think that the court instructed the jury properly in terms of what you have to find. And I think that the court was right on that. I think that this case is
Did Iverson's counsel object to the absence of expert testimony on the duty of care in the district court?
That was raised, yes, sir.
Okay.
All right. Unless there are any other questions?
I don't think so. Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Martin, have any time? All right. Why don't you take a minute if you want?
I tried to save 3 minutes. I will be very quickly. We did object strenuously.
I'll take you 3 minutes away from you, so now you can have
We did object. Thank you, Your Honor. We did object strenuously to and argue below that an expert should have been required. We also cited the Edwards v. Okidoki, which is cited in our case. And Edwards is very close, and Edwards contended that the standard of care for security at a nightclub, much like this, stands for proposition that if you're going to talk about security guards, an expert is needed. We also cited Farouk, F-A-R-O-O-Q, v. MDRB for that same proposition. So we clearly did make that argument. We also argued that Mr. Iverson was being held to a standard of ordinary care for selecting the security guard, and the argument was that an expert was needed when Iverson was accused of negligently hiring Mr. Kane. The issue here was the negligent hiring, and expert. We asked for the requirement of an expert both on the supervision and the hiring. And I would finally submit that the evidence was clear at trial that Mr. Iverson was not watching this fight. Jason Kane testified, Allen Iverson testified, and others testified that while this three-minute fight was still going on, Mr. Kane left the floor. So Mr. Kane was not there for 3 to 5 minutes throwing punches because he left the floor, retrieved Mr. Iverson, and left the nightclub. So before the fight, Curtis Fitzgerald, the security officer for the club, and others testified that while the fight was in the middle of the fight, they looked up and they saw Jason Kane take Allen Iverson, as he was supposed to do as security guard, and escort him out of the melee. So we would submit that an expert could have shed light on this and could have indicated that the conduct that Jason Kane took with regard to retrieving Mr. Iverson, the hiring of Mr. Kane, clearly was not negligent. Thank you.